Welcome to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. Drew and I are recording this week's show on Friday, October 14th, 2022, which is the tail end of a somewhat sad week, wouldn't you say, Drew? I mean,
we lost one of the greats this week.
Yeah, Dame Angela Lansbury. It was Tuesday this week, right? October 11th, and she was 96 years old. I think it says a lot, particularly after somebody who has a career that lasts 8 decades. And the comment that seemed to be out there the most is that we lost her too soon.
You know that I actually met her in 2018, I think.
Did you really?
Yeah, at a home video event for Mary Poppins on the lot.
Wow.
For Mary Poppins Returns, yeah.
We're going to talk about that film and as well as the rest of Angela's career on the second half of today's show, but I'm going to want to hear about that. That's cool.
Okay.
Also want to take a moment here to acknowledge the passing of Yu-Gi-Oh! Creator Kazuki Takahashi, who actually passed away earlier this summer. I mean, back all the way in July due to drowning. But did you see this story that came out of Stars and Stripes about how we lost him? Or
no, I had not heard this, so please inform me.
Well, it turns out Takahashi died a hero. A 60-year-old Kazuki was at the beach in Okinawa and saw an 11-year-old girl and a U.S. soldier get swept out to sea in a riptide and leaped in the water and tried to aid in the rescue. And the rough surf proved to be too much for Takahashi, and he succumbed. But what was interesting is that the U.S. Army this week went out of its way to acknowledge Kazuki Takahashi's efforts on behalf of trying to save the soldier and his noble sacrifice. So Drew and I would like to do the same right now. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the friends and family of this brave, brave man, and we're sorry for your loss. Lots of animation news this week, and as always, the news portion of Fine Tuning is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience every time, please book online at storybookdestinations.com.
Can you imagine the kind of questions they've gotten this week, Jim, with all the Disney changes? I mean, if my text messages are any indication, they are really fielding some quandaries this week, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, and look at when they announce this, just ahead of the holidays, when people have already locked in all of their travel plans for family. So it's just... not a big fan of the current Disney management team, but...
no.
I deliberately did not talk about this last week when I was recording that solo edition of Fine Tuning, because I wanted to get your take on it, but the Super Mario Brothers movie trailer dropped last week, and what did you think of that?
I actually thought it looked really solid. I thought the animation looked great, and I'm very excited about the film because... it is coming from two of the folks who made Teen Titans Go to the Movies, which I think is a really cool, wonderful little movie. So I'm very excited to see what they're doing with this this bigger budget and this different animation style. And I was really impressed. I mean, what did you think, Jim?
I'm like Super Mario Brothers one generation removed. I mean, Alice is a huge enthusiast of this stuff. And I have to admit, what I saw looked great, looked solid. Though I'm kind of more intrigued about the timing here. So the movie is supposed to arrive in theaters on April 7th, 2023. Meanwhile, Universal Studios Hollywood's version of Super Nintendo World, they're currently saying that it will open in early 2023. Speaking of cool stuff, the Super Nintendo World Shop literally just opened like yesterday up at Universal City Walk. So they're not kidding around. In order to capitalize, to leverage the Super Mario Brothers movie to sort of the ultimate, evidently the plan is right now to hold the premiere up at City Walk in the AMC, right?
Yes,
Universal.
Yes, the AMC Universal City Walk.
There we go. And then supposedly everybody comes outside and climbs into a vehicle and gets rolled down to the bottom of the lot, and then the post-premiere party will be held inside of Super Nintendo World. So,
well, you bring this up, Jim, and I don't know if you saw this, but Jeff Shell, who's the NBC Universal CEO, was on CNBC, and he was talking about, he basically said that the park and the movie were going to open up side by side.
There we go.
In Hollywood. But then you saw those photos that our buddy Bio Reconstruct put up, and the Donkey Kong mainframe is going in Epic Universe as we speak.
Well, that's kind of a different animal in that opens in 2025. Donkey Kong in Hollywood may open day and date with the Epic Universe. I mean, the notion is that on both coasts, you get this ride. I mean, face it, Seth Rogen is also voicing the character in the film. This is very much part of the Universal. Why would you want to go visit the mouse when you can hang out with Donkey Kong? So previously, Universal was all about, hey, you know, we have Harry Potter, we have The Simpsons, and now this. And they don't have a response in the pipeline for Super Nintendo World. They don't know what they're going to bring to the table that's going to be as strong and as appealing as this game-based land.
Well, you can pay $6 for an ice cream bar. So isn't that appealing, Jim?
Or you can make a reservation.
Come to Disneyland, where you get kicked in the balls repeatedly, and you're going to like it. That's the new slogan.
Well, or you get charged for that experience, okay?
That's true. Yeah.
Moving on to less testicle-based stories, you pointed out that Skydance seems to be getting ready to expand its animation division, and they're putting their money where their mouth is, right?
Yeah, they got, I think, what did it say, $400 million more in credit. And one of the things they're primarily using this for is to expand the Skydance animation platform. They are going to try to do 2 movies a year. And they are also building a brand new campus in Santa Monica for all of these animators and creators. And I ran into Brad Bird last week. Did I tell you this, Jim, at the Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol screening?
You did not. Okay.
Well, he is looking great. He's feeling great. And he's ready for to take. He's taking on Raygun full force. So, I mean, that's going to be really exciting. But it's all happening for Skydance Animation and John Lasseter. And I guess Spellbound will not be out this year, as was potentially floated.
Yeah. I was about to ask, because again, this Vicky Jensen movie with the screenplay by Linda Wolverton and, of course, a score by Menken. But Netflix-wise, they seem to be touting that this is coming in 2022. But really? Okay, that's interesting.
Apple TV Plus, Jim. Apple TV Plus.
Oh, that's right. My mistake. I keep doing that.
Yeah.
Can't really out my source on this, but they got to talk with John Lasseter after Luck debuted on Apple TV Plus. And the very thing that you and I have talked about how this movie sort of seems like John's latest version of Meet the Robinsons, and evidently that's literally what Lasseter said to this guy, you know, that just sort of, yeah, you know, it was Meet the Robinsons all over again. There was only so much I could do and wait for the next one. But that's interesting that Spellbound is now slid to 2023.
I mean, I haven't seen any promotional stuff for it. I mean, November is like tomorrow, so we haven't seen anything.
This is true.
About it. Teaser, images, toys, nothing, so.
Now, speaking of Apple TV, though, you also have uncovered some info about their holiday animation lineup. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty good, don't you think?
It's a
combination of classics and you know, new stuff. But let me bring it up.
Okay. Cool.
I think it looks pretty good. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I am unfamiliar. Sorry. It's been one of those
weeks.
Well,
you know Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, Jim. I mean, that's, you know.
Oh, that's true.
They that's a classic. Then we've got the Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, Night of the Lights holiday special, which we love.
Okay.
And it features Davy Diggs from Hamilton. I don't know what Sago Mini Friends is, but I'm sure it's something that children of all ages enjoy.
Okay.
And then Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, obviously. There's a show called Interrupting Chicken, and they're going to do a Christmas Carol holiday special. Pretzel and the Puppies Mary Montgomery holiday special. Not sure what that is either. And then another Snoopy Show special. I Want a Dog for Christmas. Charlie Brown's Christmas Tales. Charlie Brown Christmas. And then The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse, which is based on an award-winning book of the same name, will arrive on Apple TV Plus on Christmas Day, which is a short film that has a really striking animation style that looks like a really wonderful combination of 2D and 3D, and that is what I am really excited about, Jim. So there you go.
That sounds cool. And, we should have actually talked about this when you were mentioning bumping into Brad Bird, but Andrew Stanton has lined up a new live-action film that he's doing for Searchlight, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is called In the Blink of an Eye, and it is supposed to be, like, this crazy Kubrickian story that, the Hollywood Reporter write-up references 2001, Interstellar, and Magnolia. So, sounds good to me. I have the script, but I have not read it yet. Maybe we can go into detail on that on a later episode. But, I'm just happy that he's making a movie again. He's been doing a lot of TV recently. We've obviously got the WALL-E Criterion Collection edition coming out, which is very exciting. But, I'm excited about him being back in the live-action space.
Okay. Well, let's see what happens there. On the other hand, things we are not excited about is, what do you make of this Cartoon Network studio news? We've have three division, animation-related divisions at Warner's that have now been folded into two? Is that how this works?
Well, I've heard conflicting reports about this, Jim, and I would love to know what your people are telling you. I've heard it is not as big of a deal as some are making it out to be. And I know that they really took a lot of umbrage with the Cartoon Network story that I sent you in the email. Cartoon Brew, sorry. But it seems to just be a consolidation of animation resources underneath the Warner Animation umbrella. And it's not exactly they're not killing off Cartoon Network Studios exactly. They're just kind of bringing those people over. And yes, there is they are letting go of some folks, but they're still retaining some people too. So I don't know if it's quite as bad as everyone is thinking, but if people are listening to this and they think that it is just as bad, please let us know. Jim, what's your reading on this and what have you heard?
There's so much of the information that's coming out of Warner's these days, it's like, hang on, literally happening in real time. I got to go answer my phone and find out what's happening or what just got reversed. So it seems to still be shaking out. So I just feel terrible for the folks over there because it's like, I have a job, I think.
Right. Yeah. I've heard there are going to be more layoffs before the end of the month.
That's the same scuttlebutt I'm hearing. And the terrible thing about a situation like that is that virtually guarantees that nobody in the building is getting any work done because they're either on email or on the phone doing, what have you heard?
On LinkedIn.
Oh, well, there we go.
Trying to find the right deal, but yeah.
Yeah, killed it. All right. Well, let's at least end the news segment on a positive note because you have gotten to see Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Well, I've seen 40 minutes of it, Jim.
Okay, 40
minutes. So I've seen the first two acts, basically, yeah.
Okay, so what can we say?
I mean, I think it's amazing. I got to go to a little event with Guillermo and Mark Gustafson there, and he is Guillermo's co-director, who was the animation director on Wes Anderson's Fantastic Mr. Fox, which I think is one of the best animated movies of the last however many years. And they said that they worked on this movie, Jim, for 1,000 days. And at one point, there were 60 different units shooting things at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And okay. that he deliberately, Guillermo said that he deliberately kind of eschewed the typical animation style. There aren't poses. There isn't really graphic silhouettes. It's all about this kind of naturalistic acting style where characters will scratch themselves or go for an object and miss it and have to go back. And he said that capturing that level of realism really took a lot out of the animators and that you see it all on screen. It's absolutely beautiful and breathtaking and really kind of heartbreaking. And yeah, I cannot wait to see the last, you know, hour of it because it's really special. And I think it's going to be really... you know, I think people are going to talk about it, and it'll be part of the conversation for sure in the latter part of the year.
I'm so happy to hear this, especially after the Disney Pinocchio live-action thing, which, are you hearing what I'm hearing about? They are really seriously considering a live-action Tangled? Please tell me no.
I mean, I think it's going to get to the point where they just are producing them at the same time. Like, you know... It'll save him a lot of headache if you just put Aliki Cravallo in the Moana costume at the same time as she's recording the lines, you know?
Okay. Well, all right. Speaking of Disney-related stuff, folks, when we get back from this break, Drew and I will talk about the late, great Dame Angela Lansbury.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So you actually got to talk with Dame Angela Lansbury in 2018, out ahead of the Mary Poppins Returns DVD release, Blu-ray, right?
Yeah, she just came, you know, it was like a day at the studio where we were watching special features and chatting with the filmmaker, Rob Marshall. Mm-hmm. And then she just came in and sort of like was making small talk with people and saying hello. And it was like this really wonderful moment. We were kind of like blessed by this literal Disney legend. Mm-hmm. Who's got her handprints outside in Legend Square or whatever they call it, where the reflection pool used to be outside of the Team Disney Burbank building. And it was just wonderful. It was great to say hello and to say how much she meant to all of us. And it's a real loss. And what can you say about her?
I was lucky enough to see Angela Lansbury on Broadway in Sweeney Todd, the original cast with Len Carew. And then I caught the tour a couple of times. It played in Boston at what's now called the Wang Center. And I even went out to L.A. that summer and it was playing, I want to say, the Ambitson, and dragged a girlfriend to see it there because she was amazing. She just, you know, her Mrs. Lovett was just so out there. And for a lot of us who, you know, follow animation, who follow Disney, the way we met Angela Lansbury wasn't necessarily stage work, but it was Bedknobs and Broomsticks, which it's interesting you mentioned Mary Poppins, because when the negotiations fell apart with P.L. Travers, there was this moment where Walt said, don't worry about it. We got this other book, literally turned to Bill Walsh, Don DeGrady, and the Sherman Brothers, said, we've just bought a Mary Norton book that combined her two short novels, The Magic Bedknobs and Bonfire and Broomsticks, into a single volume. And it's like, we can take a lot of the stuff that we did for Mary Poppins and we can turn this into a big screen musical. And obviously, that's not what happened. They eventually sorted things out with P.L. Travers. Mary Poppins gets made. But at the same time, that was the biggest hit that Disney had had in years. So it's now the mid-60s, late 60s, and Disney actually goes back to Julie Andrews and says, hey, how would you like to make another movie for the studio? And we've got this other property that we actually were developing the same time as Mary Poppins called Bedknobs and Broomsticks. And Julie Andrews says no. So they then go to, there were three people they offered the role to before they went to Angela Lansbury. There was Judy Carne, who was on Laugh-In at the time. Then there was Lynn Redgrave, who had just done Georgie Girl. And then there was Leslie Caron. That was kind of a sort of an outlier. You know, she was old Hollywood. But then the stage musical version of MAME came to L.A. It had opened on Broadway in May of 66, but in spring of 68, Lansbury, after leaving the Broadway production, then did a limited tour on the West Coast. They were up in San Francisco, and then they came down to L.A. And the folks at Disney, it's like, ooh, she could be Eglantine Price. So they bring Angela to the lot. They show her the entire film on storyboards. And Angela thought it was kind of mechanical. It was just, okay, stand here and the knight that's on wires will fly at you or that sort of thing. But she still took the assignment. She had been away from Hollywood for a number of years at that point. The film was shot starting in March and ended in June of 1970, and then gets released to theaters the following holiday season. But the week after Angela signed to do Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Julie Andrews reached out to the studio and said, I changed my mind. I'll come and make your Bedknob movie. And Bill Walsh had to tell her, I'm so sorry. We just signed Angela Lansbury.
Wow.
Yeah. The other thing that has always fascinated me about Bedknobs and Broomsticks is that Ron Moody, who played Fagin in Oliver, was originally hired, cast and hired to be in Bedknobs and Broomsticks, but he thought his character should be the lead, and he was somewhat upset when he saw the storyboards and that sort of thing. So he stepped away at that point, and David Tomlinson, who was still on the Disney payroll at that point, because he had done, of course, Mary Poppins, you know, played Mr. Banks and then had played the villain in the original Love Bug movie, but it's like, okay, David's here. Let's use him. Drew had put together sort of a list of the animation stuff that Angela had done. And of course, 82 or thereabouts, she does The Last Unicorn for Rankin Bass. You've gotten to see that one, right?
Yeah, I like that movie a lot. I think it's pretty weird. And oh, such a different character than Mrs. Potts, obviously.
What is it? Mommy Fortuna?
Yes.
Kind of got to lean into her, some of the more villainous roles she played over there. I love the voice cast of this thing. I mean, you know, Alan Arkin is Schmendrick, but Tammy Grimes, Robert Klein, Christopher Lee.
Kind of a counterculture bunch, too, right?
Very, like, very, very much so. Very much so. But anyway, you mentioned Mrs. Potts, which when Angela got cast for the role, she decided she would model her performance after Angela Baddeley's cook character, Mrs. Bridges, from Upstairs Downstairs. She thought, you know, it's a teapot. It should be small. It should be comforting. But have you ever heard the story of the day she recorded the theme song for Beauty and the Beast?
No.
I've heard this from Don Hahn, and I've got a version of it here that Paige O'Hara shared once, and it's just basically, it's June 9th, 1990, and this is the day they've arranged to fly everybody into New York to record all of the vocals for all the songs. They've got this wonderful, huge orchestra, but Angela's flying in from California, and she's now like 3 or 4 hours behind schedule, and everybody is, well, what's going on? And finally, she rushes in the door, and she explains that the plane that she was on, they had had to literally do an emergency landing. Evidently, the airline had received some information about a bomb threat or that sort of thing. And So it had been a nightmarish day of travel to get there to do this recording. And Don Hahn was like, oh geez, I'm so sorry. Well, do you want to go to the hotel? You want to go rest? And Angela was like, well, no, you've got the full orchestra here. You've got every, you know, I mean, I can't make you do that and bring them back for another day. Let's just do this. And so she goes into the booth and she does the version of Beauty and the Beast that we hear today in the film in one take. After that nightmarish day of travel. And then after that, you know, she's literally, you know, it's like, okay, can you do your chunks of Be Our Guest? And it's like, sure. And just knocks it out. And it's like, okay, thank you. I'm going to the hotel. And that's it. She's done. So that comes out in 91, is obviously an enormous hit. And the company, to honor her, because of course of, you know, her work with Bedknobs and Broomsticks and Beauty and the Beast, they make her a Disney legend in 95. There's also that weird moment in 96 where the company does that restoration of Bedknobs and Broomsticks, which this is one of those Disney films that was edited with a machete at one point. I mean, there's two and three musical numbers that got cut out of the film or severely cut down, and Scott McQueen dug into the Disney vaults and did the best he could to sort of restore the film. And Angela actually filmed a wonderful sort of little wraparound introduction to the new edition of Beauty and the Bedknobs and Broomsticks. But this is also when she's working on Anastasia with Don Bluth for 20th Century Fox, which, by the way, what is the deal now with, given that Disney has bought 20th Century Fox, does this mean Anastasia actually is a Disney princess?
There's a lot of debate around that, Jim. I doubt she'll actually be formally introduced, mm-hmm. because, as you know, there's a whole coronation ceremony that has to happen. There are specific rules that are given mm-hmm. out when dealing with the Disney princesses as a group and individually. So I mm-hmm. doubt she will be part of that whole process. But okay. I mean, I don't know why it's not. Is it on Disney Plus?
I meant to look, because I actually enjoyed this film quite a bit. Came out in 97 and then 20 years later became a stage show, much like Beauty and the Beast did. Angela actually has a trifecta of, you know, films she made that got turned into stage musicals, because Bedknobs and Broomsticks has actually been turned into a stage show. It toured the UK and Ireland. In fact, I'm going to give people the URL address here. Bedknobonstage, one word, .com. You can go and watch a trailer for the show. And catchphrase for the, you will believe a bed can fly.
That's funny.
So Angela continues in Disney's employ. She's one of the hostesses for Fantasia 2000. She actually introduces the finale of the film, the Firebird Suite, which I would argue is perhaps the strongest one. That's the Brizzy brothers did the amazing work on that.
I mean, besides Eric's amazing Rhapsody in Blue, Jim, we got to give it up for that.
Well, that is true. That is true. That's a good one as well. Okay, so her next animation, November 2018, she's featured in Illumination's The Grinch, which, have you heard the story about what Illuminations thought they were getting when they hired Benedict Cumberbatch?
I think you've told it actually on this show before, but if you want to share one more time, do it, Jim.
He did such a wonderful job with Sherlock. So the folks for Illuminations were like, oh, we're going to get this wonderful British actor, and he's going to give us a Boris Karloff-level performance, which, you know, they wanted to have to differentiate the new feature-length live, you know, animated version versus the Jim Carrey, Ron Howard movie. And Cumberbatch came into the studio and supposedly said, well, look, this is an American fairy tale. It's written by Dr. Seuss. So shouldn't the character have an American accent? And the folks at Illumination were like, yeah, okay. They had to then do that for the rest of the movie. In fact, I guess Dame Angela Lansbury voices the mayor of Whoville. And same thing. It's largely an American accent. But to sort of bring things to a close here, we've lost this lovely lady, but we still can appreciate her work. In fact, her very last performance will be out next month, The Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery. begins its theatrical run on November 23rd and then shows up on Netflix, I want to say. What's kind of cool about this is in the movie, Angela is paired with Stephen Sondheim, her longtime collaborator. And by the way, another fun fact here, Sondheim was the very first Broadway composer to try to turn Billy Wilder's Sunset Boulevard into a Broadway musical. He envisioned it as a vehicle for Angela. In fact, they'd had such a good time working on Sweeney Todd together. It's like, let's do another show, and you get to play Norma Desmond. And the thing is that Sondheim struggled to turn this into a musical and eventually couldn't do it. The rights lapsed, and that's when Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber came in behind, and he made his Sunset Boulevard. But anyway, very last Disney role was the balloon lady in Mary Poppins Returns, which Drew was just talking about a moment ago. But that role was not written for Dame Angela Lansbury. It was actually written for Julie Andrews. The way this was supposed to work was much like Dick Van Dyke's cameo in Mary Poppins Returns, where he plays Mr. Dawes Jr. You know, the idea was the stars of the original film come in, and it's a fun nod to the audience, but they would deliberately be smallish roles because, you know, the idea was not to upstage Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda. But Andrews turned down the gig. She was legitimately concerned that it wouldn't be fair to Emily if the old Mary Poppins appeared in the new Mary Poppins movie. So Disney reached out to Lansbury because it's sort of like Mary Poppins and Bedknobs and Broomsticks are very much the same thing. And so, and Lansbury came in, I want to say they shot for a day and a half, but did a lovely job. And I just loved her performance in that part of the film. And, you know, Nowhere to Go But Up is a great song. And as we said at, you know, the top of the show, when you leave at 96 and people say you were gone too soon, that says a lot about a person and their art and their career. And Drew and I offer our sincerest condolences to her friends and family at this tremendous loss. And that's a sad note to end the show on. So let's give people something more fun to do. And again, the something I enjoy doing so much is listening to Drew's wonderful Light the Fuse podcast. And so what are we talking about this week? What's going on there?
I think we're doing a revisiting episode because Charles and I were a little busy the last mm-hmm. couple of weeks. So we're doing our chat with Robert Elswit that we did a few years ago. We're condensing all three parts into one super episode for everybody. So I hope you enjoy that.
I thought it was very cool earlier this week. Was it Gizmo that did the article about...
Vulture.
Vulture, that did the very best movie-based podcast. And who was number two on the list but Light the Fuse, which I took a weirdly parental moment of pride for that. It's like, oh, that's so cool for Drew and Charles.
Yeah, it was a great surprise. Probably unwarranted. But
no, not at all. In fact, what I loved about the way they described the show is the very thing that I keep telling folks. It's like, yes, it's about Mission Impossible, likewise Top Gun and the John Wick films. But at the same time, you get these great stories about all these other films that these people worked on. And the fact that they pointed out the whole thing of, because you're doing these recordings long after the films have come up, the pressure is off, so you get the real stories.
Yes, we've got a lot of great stuff coming up. We've got a really big, we're returning to like the fuselage a little mm-hmm. bit, and we've got a really big, cool exclusive coming in that arena that we can't announce yet, but will be happening soon. And I'm just so excited for everybody to hear it. And yeah, we're back every week. We'll figure out some. We'll talk to the key grip. We'll talk to the, you know. We just had a craft service guy on. I mean, we will talk to anybody. So, yeah, more episodes soon.
All right. And you know, we didn't make the Vulture list, but we have a couple of podcasts here you might want to listen to. We got Disney Dish with Len Testo. We got Marvelous Disney, which I do with Aaron Adams. And I need to get a brand new Looking at Lucasfilm recorded with Brian Gunn. Tell you what, folks, if you could do Drew and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review not just the show you're listening to right now, Fine Tuning, but also Light the Fuse, that would be helpful. Likewise, if you really, really, really like what you were listening to, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be helpful. Drew, can you tell the nice folks how they can find you?
Yes, it is a Drew Tailored, like a tailored shirt, on Instagram and Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. And that's going to do it for this week, folks. Thanks again for listening, and Mr. Taylor and I will be back soon.